let's talk and let's laugh, cause I got so much to tell you, so let's go kick some art.
Kia ora and welcome to Kick Arts with Emma and Stephen, New Zealand's comprehensive art show brought to you on Planet FM 104.6 and streaming live around the globe thanks to our podcasts, which you can download from planetaudio.org.nz. Tonight we have lots of variety on the show. We chat to Stacey Morrison about her fabulous new book, Kia Kaha. We talk all things music with Steve Matheson from the band Luna Vela and all things art with Hawke's Bay's Michael Sharp. Plus we're catching up with Topo Theatre on their latest venture, and Richard from Arise is back to chat about music videos and his MTV fame. Remember, you can stay in touch with Kick Arts and support us by donating at kickarts.org.nz. Well, Auckland saw the move to level 3 this week, and what did we all do straight away? Get takeaways. So to kick the show off, here is the wonderful classic song from the musical Oliver, Food, Glorious Food.
Yeah.
Well, Emma, another week recorded on Zoom ahead tonight.
It sure is. And by the time, of course, this goes to air on Sunday, we will have been in level 3 in Auckland since midnight Tuesday. And the rest of the country, of course, moved from gatherings of 50 to 100.
Yeah, that'll help some events. Hard on theatre and those bigger ones, but certainly for hospitality and smaller theatres, at least 100 is better than 50.
Definitely. But I think one thing that was really interesting that came out last week, actually, in a COVID update, was the fact that for theatres, that the performers are counted as staff. So whilst we always knew about that backstage bubble thing and they were counted as a separate bubble, the fact that they actually count as staff might make a difference for a few places.
Mm, could do. Obviously, we're pre-recording this, so you haven't gone and got the takeaways yet, but you will have by the time this goes to air. So what would you have snuck out to get this week?
Well, I'm definitely hanging out for some salty fries. So good old fish and chips. And actually, it will be too late by the time this goes to air, but Stage Antic have actually put a promotion up this week because I'm really aware that there will be masses of queues at KFC, at Burger King, at McDonald's. But as big franchise holders, I know that franchises are still important and we're all in this together. We're a team of 5,000. But there will be a lot of local businesses that are really struggling. So Stage Antic's had a competition. Tell us who your favourite cafe or takeaways are that you want to go and get and why. And I'm giving someone a $50 voucher on Friday to go and spend in the weekend at their favourite local business.
Brilliant. Great idea. I'm lucky for Father's Day I got given a voucher to the cafe restaurant Hello Beastie, which is a Korean-Japanese fused restaurant, and they keep their waiting staff employed by being the delivery drivers during lockdown so that they don't miss out on work to the Uber situation. So I always like to support them in lockdown. They deliver beautiful meals, so I'm looking forward to having my belated Father's Day treat sometime this week. And again, yeah, not a franchise, supporting a wonderful couple, Emma and her husband, working really hard to bring really awesome food out to people.
Well, it was interesting too. I saw someone mention the other day, Uber drivers are only one person, right? And they've still got to sit in that queue at McDonald's, KFC, etc. So getting Uber might not be quicker than lining up in one of those queues.
Yeah, true. Well, we've got another great lineup tonight. Lots of variety. Shall we kick it off?
Yeah, let's get kicking.
And Emma and I are delighted to be joined now by the fabulous Stacey Morrison, here to chat all about her book, Kia Kaha, written with her and Jeremy Sherlock. Welcome to the show, Stacey.
Tēnā kōrua. Thank you both for having me.
I feel like we've pinched you straight from your radio show to chat on ours, and that makes me feel really guilty because you've probably had a long day.
Oh, no, don't feel guilty. I'm grateful. And it made me kind of get out as soon as I possibly could. So with love, that's a good thing.
Brilliant. And you've created this beautiful, and I mean beautiful, book, Kia Kaha.
Yeah, and I would say the beauty is mostly not mine or Jeremy's, it's actually the illustrators. And that's been an incredible part of this project, is that we've been able to give a platform to amazing artists, digital artists, young Māori digital artists. So that was our vision, because this book is called Kia Kaha, a storybook about Māori who changed the world, to be able to follow that right through with digital illustrations of each of the people. And you'll see there's different styles in there. So you have people who are well known, like Miriama Grace Smith and Māori Mermaid. So different illustrators. And I just thought it was fantastic how they all interpreted it. And that's to kind of also make it visually interesting, but hopefully to a wide range of people as well.
Absolutely. How did you choose who to profile in the book?
Well, we just had an awful time trying to narrow it down, actually. So it was really, really hard. And actually, probably the most important thing about this book, what I want people to take from it, is that we all have this opportunity to get to know our heroes better. So that's the heroes of our whānau, of our families, of our iwi, of our tribes, but also of our histories in general. So to look at how New Zealand history does have an important place. And for so long, we haven't really focused on that so much. I know when I was a kid, I could tell you more about, you know, wars and Roman kind of architecture more than I could things that had happened in New Zealand. So really what we're trying to say here is with your actions, with your values, with the choices that you make, you are changing the world. And I'd love it if, rather than just thinking, oh, well, those are the only people that matter, it's definitely not that. They are examples and reflections of excellence amongst us. And we hope that their stories will inspire others, but also inspire people to consider what are their personal stories of their ancestors, of their whānau, that they can actually learn more about.
I can definitely see this book sitting on the shelf of every educator from next year when New Zealand History's curriculum comes in. These are the resources that we need.
Kia ora. Oh, that's really special. This is the first interview I've done, so got a little bit goosebumpy hearing that. And the thing is, we worked with the people that are in the book where we possibly could. And, you know, it's such a personal thing. Like if I think of Keisha Castle Hughes, and she's in LA, and I said to her, this is the interpretation that I've written because I'm thinking of a young person who has big emotions, like she's talked about having, and how a flip side of big emotions can be big talent and a way of being able to share those big emotions with the world, like she can as an actress. But she's also talked about how that's been a struggle for her sometimes, and mental health struggles have been something that she's opened up about. So I wanted to talk about it in an age-appropriate way that's mana enhancing for her, and hopefully that young people can see themselves and go, wow, I have big emotions as well, and maybe there are ways that I could, like Keisha, figure out how that's actually can be a talent or offer an outlet in my life as well.
I just love the variety, though. I mean, as a young person who's going to read this, there's someone in there to inspire them. I mean, from, you know, as you mentioned, actors to comedians to politicians to midwives and healers. I mean, you've just covered such a broad mix that I think there is literally someone in here for everyone to turn to, no matter what the field is. I think that's pretty special.
I should mention a set of books that my sister and I had when we were little, and it was called The Value Of. And of course, because it was overseas, there weren't any New Zealanders in it, but it was about the values that those people held dear and displayed and that helped them be successful. And it was people like Louis Pasteur and Helen Keller, Jackie Robinson, Harriet Tubman. So I related to them because I just always remember Jackie Robinson's courage. So it was quite weird for us to be growing up and relating to these people in different histories, obviously, but we didn't have any reference to home. So that's why we are hoping that they'll relate it not only to themselves, but to someone in their whānau and realise that those are values that can be helpful to us all. I haven't clearly said it's like this is the value of or anything like that, but that's partially what the whakatauki do. They remind us, and each person has a whakatauki aligned with them, about, you know, the proverb that talks to the kind of, the essence of what that person expresses. So I think of people like Dame Tariana Turia, and she liked the fact that we'd chosen to give tribute to her auntie who brought her up and reminded her that sometimes you can either choose to be liked or to do the right thing. And I thought that was a really cool value. And then luckily she liked that too. it's those kind of things, like storybook, easy to read, but I did want to offer some sort of insight into the values and actions that people had shown and that's made them, you know, successful and helped them change the world.
So how did you go about selecting the whakatauki for each person? Because that itself must have been a massive journey.
Yeah, so some were easy. We had a spreadsheet and we sort of filled it in on Google Docs, and some, you know, actually we did have a couple of crossovers where Jeremy and I were thinking, we both thought of it, you know, to use the whakatauki for different people. But that's the cool thing about whakatauki is you can apply it to different situations. So some I already knew, some I referenced, you know, books, some of my husband's books. So I went quite broad, you know, for different sources or ones that I might know, that we have these wānanga, these learning schools and opportunities like conferences that where we're taught whakatauki. And so in years of that, you know, I had references from people like Barehuia Milroy and people who have been mentors for us. So I think also, I guess, a good reference there is how Henemoa Elder's book's gone so well. Aroha with whakatauki is probably a good reference point for people to go, oh yeah, I know what whakatauki are now. And so it just goes to show how we all contribute and add to the landscape. And hopefully Henemoa's work, you know, enhances ours and ours enhances hers. So it's about the culture of arts and creation that, like you say, sometimes we have holes in our resource needs and our book needs. So let's all work together to try to fill some of those and offer different things that we're now ready for.
Absolutely.
And the whakatauki actually that you had up that you showed us before we came, started recording, is perfect for just that. You know, we do grow through you and you grow through us, like you're saying.
Yeah, ka ora pau ya koe, ka ora koe yo. So perhaps I survive because of you and you survive because of me. And I thought, say in these COVID times, that's relevant too. You know, we're all making behavioural choices that impact each other. But that's the incredible thing about whakatauki. You know, I just have these moments of awe where I go, oh, wow, that was so clever. Our ancestors were so clever. And it hasn't always been recognised. It definitely wasn't talked to me as a child in school. And, you know, Chinese proverbs are great. All the proverbs of the world, you know, they endure for a reason because they hold wisdom in such short terms. But for whakatauki, quite often they relate to birds that are native to New Zealand. And so that they're really central and unique to us. And I love that. And just saying things like, hei te tau titoki, you know, so when the titoki tree blooms, then that means in the near future at some point, we don't know when, but that tells you, it also informs you about the titoki tree. You know, if you didn't know that they're not typical bloomers, you don't know when it's going to happen. So all of those things, I just think, are so layered with genius. And I just find it so humbling to think about what wisdom has been transferred and has been passed down through generations.
Were there lovely moments when you created this book where you researched somebody and went, oh, I didn't know that about them? Were there those surprise moments along the journey?
Yes, and so there should be. and so, you know, really interesting stories, because that was one thing we want to talk about, stories and experiences, things that happened to them that did actually impact the choices and life that they've had. So sometimes it can be like a one-off or a chance meeting or something that happens and that kind of changes the course of their life. And I think that's so cool. And that's the whole point of books, is to encapsulate a story and a moment in time. And the difference about putting it in a book is it shows, I guess, that more other people will be interested in it too. But we all have those moments, and I think we should all feel like those moments are valid and important and recognise them when they happen. That, you know, probably both of you can immediately think of a time where you had an experience, or you choose a school subject and then someone said, hey, what about this? And then that changed, you know, that what about drama? And then that changed your life, you know? Yeah. So I think that's what we tried to do, and we had to do research to find that. Sometimes it was easy. Sometimes I think, oh, that, I don't know if I've nailed that, or maybe the person just did so much. It was really hard to encapsulate, you know, that kind of story in a few words. But what we've tried to do is encapsulate in essence kind of the values that they have shown and their Māori way of being as well that's added to their achievement.
So you, going back to education again, what's your thinking, Stacey, about the New Zealand's history curriculum? Have you looked at that at all? Like, hearing you talk, I'm so inspired because you're talking from a place of knowing. And I mean, it's a huge concern for educators. So many educators out there in New Zealand that don't know any of these stories, don't know these people. Have we got the resources in New Zealand to be doing it justice? And how do we get our iwi and everyone involved to be a part of this process?
Yeah, no, I'm really mindful of that because some iwi have different capacity to others. So I'm from Ngaitahu, and we have different capacity to other iwi that aren't post-settlement like we are. So For one thing, I think we can use digital resources. I've been amazed. My kids are at three different schools. Of course they are in COVID times, but primary, intermediate and secondary. But I am amazed at what their teachers are coming up with. You know, like they are turning everything into maybe a slideshow or a, you know, clicking a link. You're using different apps. You're maybe having online quizzes. All of those things are so innovative. So that does give me hope that that can be created. But, you know, people need to be able to resource that properly. Like you say, from what I can tell, there is going to be that support and that resource. I think I know one person who's involved with the curriculum, and it's mindset. To me, it's mindset. If we are in a growth mindset where we go, far out, I've lived here for a long time and I didn't know that, and you're interested in learning it, that's a totally different response from someone going, well, I never knew that, so that can't be true and it can't be important. You know, so the difference in mindset to me is what makes the difference. And personally, I love continuing learning and being a lifelong learner. So I hope that if we can approach it like that, and also know that it is quite challenging. You know, you think you know what happened in your place, and the truth is that Māori history hasn't been centred. It's just been quite prevalent to just go, okay. You know, like I, if I can give an example, I went on a cruise in Akaroa, and you know, it's just a nice family cruise. And they said, and this is Akaroa that was discovered by the French, and they gave a date. And I'm thinking, I know my ancestors were here before that. I come from there. So were they just hanging out waiting to be discovered by French people? I mean, it's...
You didn't run up and grab the microphone?
No, we just looked at each other and went, oh my gosh, like we can tell you that, you know, in May of 1840, our ancestors signed the treaty at Akaroa, right where we were, you know, so... And it's only seven generations from me. I mean, I don't know if that's only. A lot of people think that's a long time ago. But, yeah, it is fascinating. And, I've been wrong. I'm happy to be wrong and learning. I think that's better than being wrong and refusing to learn more.
Absolutely.
If anyone from the Ministry of Education is listening, this is the cover girl right here.
Yeah.
That growth mindset, people need to get that.
And then they need beautiful resources like this book that supports that. Finally, Stacey, we're nearly out of time, but I'm curious. I mean, we all know you from your TV and radio world, but from an author point of view, is this your first adventure into writing, or have we been here before?
Oh, no. So my husband, Scotty, and I have written Māori at Home, which is a resource. We call it Up and Go Survival Guide for anyone who wants to use Māori language at home with their family in particular. He's written quite a few Māori Made Easy, Māori Made Easy 2, Māori at Work, the phrase book of Modern Māori. These are all, you know, big texts. And he and I also wrote Māori Made Fun together last lockdown last year. So that super fun time, but that was, you know, crosswords and quizzes and all those kind of things. And then I also put out my first words in Māori. So that's an illustrated book for families, you know, with kids learning their first words. I mean, actually the best day ever was when a two-year-old saw me at a shop here in Auckland, and she looked at me for seconds, only seconds. And she said, "You're the lady from my Māori book." Oh. And I thought, oh my gosh, that's
beautiful. Like,
it's an award for me. I just loved it so much. What a bright little button. What an awesome, you know, kid, totally unexpected. Like, that's the author part at the back that no one reads, you know?
Yeah, that is gorgeous.
Not kids. They're so incredible.
Brilliant. Well, Stacey, it's been a privilege to chat to you tonight. We'll let you finally get home and get some dinner. Kia Kaha is available where all good books will be sold. And we, Emma and I, will be pushing hard to make sure the schools that we work with have it on their shelves. Thanks so much for your time, Stacey.
Thanks, Kate. I really appreciate it. Thank you for your lovely questions.
And that was 660 with their song Pepeha. Very appropriate following on from the beautiful Stacey Morrison, Emma.
Definitely. And wasn't it great to talk to her?
Yeah, fabulous book. Can't wait to see that out on the shelves. I've just checked my research. It's out in just over a week's time. Now, we're lucky to be joined by Richard from Arise. He was unable to make it last week as he was unwell when we caught up with Ant. Welcome, Richard.
Hi. I'm glad to be here again.
Great to have you here. And look, we just wanted to say thank you because, Richard, you donated the wonderful prize for our new intro and outro. And Ant Tarrant's looking forward to working with you soon on a music video.
Same with him. Looking forward to it.
So it's been a funny old year since we last caught up with you. How is business going?
It's actually going quite well. So we shot a music video for Roman, and now it's on MTV and headed to MTV. So, yeah, business is good. People are trying to contact me as of late and working with real estate. Yeah, corporate and creative, balancing the two. It's been good.
And does some of that corporate stuff just keep sort of the bills ticking along in between the music gigs?
Yeah. With that, though, it'll be hard to just rely on creative projects.
Is there a style or theme that you're noticing in music videos? I don't know about you, Emma, but, you know, we get some wonderful things sent to us here at the show. And I've really noticed the quality step up in some of the last few videos we've been sent. Are you noticing, Richard, people's, I guess, demanding a higher expectation on what the quality of the music video?
Funny thing, actually, because like most artists would say they would want a movie in a music video form. So that's the style they're going for. And then, yeah, it all boils down to the budget, to be honest, because like if they have enough for props, for the location, then it'll look the way they want to. But it is a balance, so it really depends. But the common theme that most artists want, they've always been saying, oh, I want it to be a movie, like so angles and all the filmography, cinematography shots that you see in movies, they've been wanting it in music videos.
And I suppose it comes down to the more they want, the more editing and slide for you to work on and the longer it takes.
Yeah, definitely. So that's why the details and everything needs to be done within the meeting and the planning. So it's not heavy on the editing, because if a video is shot the way we want it in the beginning, editing will flow smoothly.
So if somebody is a new artist and coming to you to make their first music video, how do you guide them through the process? I'm about to release my new single of Let It Go. What can I expect working with you?
Let It Go. Okay, sounds like a good song. First, obviously, I had to meet the artist. And so we have an initial meeting just to not even talk about the project, but just to break ice between me and the new person, talk about what they do, who they are, because that's what we want to represent in the video, you know? And then after that, after the meeting, I send them a form to fill out, brief form of all their hopes and dreams for the music video. And then after that, me and my business partner would discuss the brief, what could be done, what can't be done, alternatives, and then we have a meeting with the artist, and then we talk about the location, putting things into play, like the details and what can and can't be done, the alternatives, whatever they so choose, and then we will progress to the planning stage once the storyline is set up, and then me and Horison will, plan for the production period. But yeah, it's, we have to look at the lighting, the environment, everything comes into play. So it's pretty much we're set building as well. So yeah, it's just, it's an insane process.
Sounds cool though. What sort of time frame are we talking? Start to finish for a music video?
So Ant's one is a basic one. I'll just talk about a basic one. So his one would take one day of filming, maybe depending on the editing, maybe 2 weeks of editing. Like that's with the review of the artists themselves. So we send them a draft. They get a form to fill out on what to add, what they don't want, like all the excess comments, notes, whatever, and then we read that and then we'll take on board what they said if it suits. So around maybe 3 weeks, but the one we just shot with Roman, so Roman's Ron Manalili, he's my brother. We've shot that for 3 days. So his editing period is way longer. So as it progresses, obviously prices go up, but I mean, yeah.
And how does MTV pick something like that up? Is that by just his own marketing, or do you push the marketing as well?
How it ends up on MTV, I think that's more in him. But I have a feeling it, like, once they've sent the video, right, it's going to go through, I'm sure it's a panel where they look if it's good enough to be on TV. And then if it looks professional, everything's set, they like it, then eventually it's going to go through the process of being on TV.
Wow. What an amazing thing, like you've said, for your brand and for Roman as well.
Yeah. It's quite a ride for him too. He, just a little bit about my brother as well. It's his first song and it's already on MTV. So
that's cool.
And that's his first music video with us. I mean, he worked his ass off to work with us as well. But I mean, yeah, it's been quite a ride. So happy for him and happy for the team. Just goes to show like how much we've improved in our skills. And looks like hopefully in a few years, hopefully soon we'll reach international levels, not just Oceania, Australia, New Zealand.
And with us going to level 3 tomorrow, because mm-hmm. we're pre-recording this on Tuesday night, what does that mean for you? Like, obviously, do you have to wait till level 2 to be back recording, I suppose? Or are you able to go back and do filming at level 3?
Yeah, most likely just corporate filming. So, like, for example, if when working with real estate agents or, like, companies, obviously they have to do in the legalities for us to film at the area. And then obviously the COVID protocols, but as of us shooting for our own stuff, it's going to be tricky under level 3 conditions because we have to take account everyone, even not just my crew, and the cast and the subcons. Like we have to keep everyone in check. So it's going to be tricky, but it is what it is. So I reckon, yeah, level 3. Probably focus more on corporate, and then once it's level 2, I'm sure that's when we start shooting for Ants as well anyways. So yeah,
brilliant. And how can people get in touch with you if they want to make a music video with you or hire you for their corporate gig?
Yes, we have a website, so it is under an upgrade, but it's still running. So it's arisegroup.com,
and it's O-Rise, O-R-I-S-E.
Yes, arisegroup.com.
Fantastic. Well, we hope the last part of this year is a little bit smoother for you. And again, Emma and I are just so grateful that you supported Kick Arts with your wonderful prize for Ant. He's a great guy. You're going to have lots of fun making his video. We can't wait.
Which we might be appearing in.
Oh, yeah. We've already signed up as talent, just to let you know. So be warned.
Great. That's all
be warned. We were going to ask Emma too, if we're talent in this video, do you supply the caravan out the back with the catering trucks? Like, will we have our own hair and makeup team?
Oh,
we might need a lot.
Food, it depends what we're talking here. So food dietary requirements.
Brilliant. Yeah. No, look, we look forward to it. And thanks again and keep up the great work.
No worries. Thank you so much. Thank you for having me here again. And thank you for all of the help you've given to my company as well.
Absolute pleasure. And we leave you now. We're going to play the song Emma, They're Back, Welsh of the West End. They've got a new one. It's an old one, but a new one. And it's Don't Stop Believing.
Midnight
Well, Emma, shall we jump to our inbox and see who's emailed us this week?
Definitely. So, from your TV screen to in your face, 7 Days Live hits the road. New Zealand's longest running and best loved comedy TV show is hitting the road from the 20th of November to the 18th of December to 13 towns around the country. Of course, with the host Jeremy Corbett and team captains Di Henwood and Paul Ego. So this is one not to be missed. New Plymouth, Palmerston North, Wellington, Auckland, Blenheim, Christchurch, Dunedin, Invercargill, Hamilton, Gisborne, Napier, Tauranga, Whangarei. Go and check that out. Tickets are through Ticket Tech most places, and Wellington in Auckland is Ticketmaster. So that is 7 Days Live tour.
Awesome. I've missed it on Friday. That's been something I used to always enjoy, or Thursday. I think they might have moved it too. Anyway, the Outlook for Someday presents a fracking tour of Taranaki. Despite the government's pledge to be net carbon zero by 2050, onshore fossil gas exploration and production continues in the Taranaki region. A fracking tour of Taranaki is a short documentary highlighting an environmental catastrophe persisting in Aotearoa's backyard, the expansion of oil and natural gas operations in Taranaki. The film follows local teacher and climate activist Sarah Roberts on a tour of gas sites across Taranaki. From water contaminants to fire balls, we see the widespread impacts that oil and gas production has had on the community and the environment in the region. So check it out. It's part of the Someday Stories series. It's on Radio New Zealand and Māori Television on Demand, but you can also look up Someday Stories on Facebook and YouTube to see the series there.
And the 2021 Michael Gifkins Prize awarded to Tom R. Wagner for Paper Cage. So he was awarded this for his crime novel, Paper Cage. He wins a publishing contract and a $10,000 advance against his royalties. So Paper Cage is a gripping literary thriller about abducted children, family loyalty, and a community in crisis, and a woman who will have to make hard choices in a quest to save a child she loves. And this is due to be published in September 22.
Now, another part of the Someday Stories series is Taiao. It explores how we as a multicultural people use Aotearoa's natural environment through a non-verbal documentary experience. It is a chance to communicate the consequences of our industries and our reckoning with colonisation, non-verbally allowing us to have a look at a sustainable, equitable future while acknowledging an unsustainable present. With the content of a nature documentary edited a bit like a music video and composed using the soundscape of native Tonga Puro along with electronic synths, Taiao's experimental approach distills the cinematic experience into its pure form. Check that out as well on Radio New Zealand and Māori Television on Demand, plus the Someday Stories site on Facebook and YouTube.
And yet another one from Someday Stories, bringing the conversation of gender diversity onto our marae. He Taki Tapu Aho brings the character Blake, is called to return home to their marae, and they are faced with a decision. Do they return as their full, authentic self, or do they hide who they truly are for the comfort of their whānau? This is a heartfelt drama, and we meet Blake among their chosen whānau and in their safest place, their bedroom. They then head to the marae with the company of their supportive cousin, Kura. So this is written, directed, produced, and predominantly performed by Taki Tapui, Whakapapa Māori, LGBTQIA+ people, and will be coming to our screens online. So this is part of the Someday Stories Series 5. It premieres on the 13th of September, so it's already premiered. And, of course, you can stream Radio New Zealand, Māori TV on demand, as well as the Someday Stories website, Facebook, YouTube and Vimeo.
I think we better get the Someday Stories onto our show, Emma.
I think so too.
Now, if you have something to promote, send us an email at info@kickarts.org.nz and we will talk about it in future episodes. Or if you'd like to come on and talk about it yourself, let us know. And now we're joined by Steve Matheson from Luna Vela. Welcome, Steve. Great to have you on Kick Arts.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
great to have you here. And you have just released your latest single, 6 out of 10 Friend, which we will play at the end of this interview. But first of all, tell us what and who and all about Luna Vella.
So Luna Vella is my new band, which I want to play live. I put on an EP a couple of years ago, which was just sort of bedroom recordings, but this is a kind of a full rock album. And basically, I just really miss playing live. So I just was kind of waiting till this album was done to play live again, because bedroom kind of electronic-y stuff just isn't really that interesting live, or in my opinion. So this is kind of like I want to be like a loud rock band. Ideally, yeah.
And is that the style of music you enjoy?
Yeah. I grew up listening to Britpop, so I love British music, yeah.
So Britpop's the influence, but,
definitely.
You know, your press release or your information that was sent to us very much said that this song is about not caring about what other people think. It's quite quirky, the lyric.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's the thing that sort of stopped me from doing music for so long. I just kind of, in my previous band, Collapsing Cities, I kind of overthought everything, and I kind of people-pleased, and the whole sort of MO of this project is zero ifs, just like completely just kind of the more out the gate the lyrics, the better. Just kind of ridiculous pop songs is kind of what I'm going for with this project, or trying to, you know.
With loud rock music, how much do you think people listen to the lyrics?
Good question. Do people still listen to lyrics? I mean, I like song title. I'm all about having a weird song title. Like, I find if a song comes out and it has a unique or ridiculous song title, I'm more likely to listen to it than if it's just another song called Baby.
Absolutely. So tell us about your own musical journey. When did it all start for you?
So I used to write songs in a band called Collapsing Cities back in the day, and we went to the UK to do the whole kind of music-y thing or give it a shot, and then that was like kind of awesome and kind of a disaster, and then we came to do our second album, and that was quite difficult because we all wanted different things, and personally I hate the second Collapsing Cities album so much. And so I actually got a bit of a chip on my shoulder about that for a long time, and which is terrible because when I was 20, I was always like, I'm not going to be chip on shoulder guy when I'm 30, and ended up becoming that guy, which I'm kind of disappointed in myself about. Sorry, I'm not really answering the question, but yeah, like I've got my love of music back again, which is awesome. And I'm just enjoying writing songs and not overthinking stuff, just kind of like fun and, yeah.
Who inspires you musically, or who has inspired you musically?
Damon Albarn, I love everything he does. David Bowie, Chemical Brothers, Britpop, British music. I'm all about British music.
So has lockdown given you time to do some writing, or are you too busy getting the rest of your album together?
No, it's actually been good because I think my thing with this project is, like, if anyone cares about the album, like, I have to learn from my mistakes of what I did last time. Like, I, you know, and so the thing that my biggest mistake last time is, like, second album just destroyed me, like, at Collapsing Cities, like, just, like, overthought it. My mental health was terrible as a result of it. And so I've written 25 songs for my next album, just so that, like, if anyone cares about this album, whatever happens, then I don't have that position where you just like, oh, gotta write songs and all the, you know, kind of thing. So I've just about finished the first album, and I've got enough songs for the next album so that whatever happens, yeah, I won't do the same dumb stuff I did in my last band. Yeah.
Well, you know, as long as we learn from our mistakes.
Totally. Yeah, no, exactly. It's all a learning curve, you know, like, it's kind of, like, it's just funny now. Like, I think about all the dumb stuff I've done musically in my old band. You just got to laugh at it. I was just, like, young and entitled.
And that's quite interesting, because on Kick Arts we have some questions that we quite often ask our guests, and one of them is, if you could go back and tell your 16-year-old self something, what would it be?
Stay sober.
Fair enough.
I was going to say, and probably don't be so entitled.
And don't be so entitled, yeah. reason. Don't fall for the rock and roll cliche tropes. That, I mean, that was my biggest problem with my previous band, Collapsing Cities. I just fell for all the rock and roll cliches, you know. I mean, when we went to London, I just kind of did all the dumb stuff. But, you know, you just got to laugh at it now. It's just like, you know, it was what it was.
But how cool, though, to be able to say that you did go to London for the music scene, because there would be a lot of New Zealand talent that wouldn't even be able to think of to go overseas, especially now in a COVID world.
Totally. I'm so grateful for that experience, because we all have British passports as well, which is just like a ridiculous thing. Yeah, totally. I think you've just always got to be grateful for anything, you know, like some bands don't even get to like play a gig in Wellington, you know. And I think also like just the fact that if you play a gig and people come to see you play, that it's something you can never take for granted, especially with attention spans and Netflix. And, you know, the fact that people drove to come and see you is, like, a really cool thing, you know?
Is that the goal here next, to get the album out and then do some touring with it?
Yeah, definitely. Just I'm going to release it. Hopefully I can release every song as a single, or, like, release drip feed every song out and then start playing live and just see what happens, really, I guess. Hope for the best.
And your other band members have all been parts of other bands previously. Or are they now just part of you, or are they still connected elsewhere?
I wrote one song on the album. There's one co-write on the album with James Brennan, who is the songwriter in Collapsing Cities. We always sort of write well, but I kind of wanted to just sort of work with different people.
Yeah, cool.
It's a different sound, and, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, we're going to play your song to end the interview. Tell us, we spoke briefly about it at the beginning. Well, I guess what's the inspiration behind this song, 6 out of 10 Friend?
I think it's just kind of that. So generally when I write songs, I start with the song title first. So I kind of count the song title, and I just thought it would be funny to write a song about those sort of friendships that everyone has, about like people who, you know, like a 6 out of 10 friend to me is someone who's like a really good person. You like them, you don't wish them any ill will, you genuinely like them, but you just don't have any rapport. You know, everyone has those friendships where you just kind of bump into them in the supermarket and you just have nothing to talk about, but you really like them. That's kind of the gist of the song. And you're like, the conversation's like, how have you been? How's your mum? Oh, what have you got in your trolley?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Nice to see you.
Take care.
Take care.
How's lockdown? Yeah.
Totally. And it's not, they're not like bad people. They're lovely, but it's just, and sometimes like maybe you might try really hard to, because you're aware of how little rapport you have, you might even be like, all right, I really like that person, I'm going to make the effort. And you make the effort, but you're just still just...
Not quite there.
Not quite there.
Brilliant. Well, it's an absolute pleasure to talk to you, and we wish you well with this album and the next. We will happily play your singles as they come out, so keep sending them our way. And we will play now 6 out of 10 Friend.
Talking at me for a whole hour is an idea of fun. Not that I want to, not that I want to talk about myself. Hanging with you makes me feel jaded, make it feel unforbidden. 6 out of 10. 6
And now we're joined by the wonderful Sharon, who has reviewed the book Magic Beans, The Untold Story, which is by Terence Bull, who we interviewed last week. Now, Sharon, this is a bit of a different book to what we've usually given you.
Well, it is. It's a long time since I've read a story of Jack and the Beanstalk, to be honest. It was nothing that I thought it was going to be.
Well, and it was one of his key comments in the interview is he wanted to sort of tell the business story through the eyes of this, I guess, fairy tale adventure to hook people in when they're having to read about some pretty serious topics. Did you find that sort of crossed across okay?
Absolutely. Definitely, it's an essential guide, I think, for anybody who's starting up or running a business from such a successful New Zealand business coach. The story was easy to read. It was fun. It was interesting, and it certainly gave you things to think about within a business, from setting it up from the very beginning right through. Basically, he takes a journey with Jack as he's taught the 12 magic beans. So that's his whole philosophy, is these 12 magic beans by a wise old man, who I'm assuming is Terence Bull. The old man offers Jack a trade for the cow. So it's still the cow and the magic beans. He explained that these magic beans would give Jack the knowledge and understanding he needed to become as rich as him. So I think the whole philosophy behind it, COVID-19 lockdown, many business people reached out to Terence for help in order to rapidly solve his clients' primary issues and to make his business coaching services more accessible worldwide. He developed the Magic Bean program. So he kind of brought his 35 years of business and marketing into the story. So I think as far as, you know, setting up a business or just even, I don't know, I suppose just life lessons, really, starting from the beginning and managing to build it, doing a review of where you're at and goals of where you want to be within life. So whether, I suppose, it's not a business, it could just be your personal goals. What do you want to achieve? He kind of said, you know, don't aim too low. If you aim low, that's where you're going to go in life. If you aim higher, well, that's great. If you achieve that, you've got something to work forward or work towards. So he certainly brings that across in his whole story, really.
Now, your day job is as a trainer. So if you're training in a business sense, is this a tool that you could see would be, you know, useful for people out there from a training perspective?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it was easy for people to understand. So sometimes when you're talking, and I know, you know, training financial can be really hard for people to understand that whole financial side of it. He breaks it down into really easy goals, and number one magic bean, you know, and the building blocks, and you go up to the 12 magic beans once you've got the whole principle and the whole basis of your business or the finances sorted out. So whether, as I say, whether it's your personal life and your building blocks on what you need to achieve, your budgets, you know, people that may be financially looking at their finances over COVID, I've spent too much on my credit card, I need to really analyse what I wear, where I want to go, what I want to do with my money and my life, you could certainly put it into this book.
Brilliant. So suitable then for new business and people reassessing, I guess, their current business operations.
Yeah, look, I felt it had no limit. You know, there were many things that a varied number of people could learn about business structures, whether, as I say, personal or business world. I think it's one of those books that you would probably see a varied number of people having in their bookshelf.
That's cool. Rating out of 10. I know it's a bit different to your normal books.
Yeah, from my normal books, absolutely. The good fiction stories, this was something. 8.5, 9.
Wow, that's a good score from Sharon. Awesome.
Yeah, it was.
Well, Magic Beans, The Untold Story by Terence Bull is available now where all good books are sold. Thanks, Sharon.
Thank you for having me.
And this next song is from New Zealand's own very talented Lewis Francis. Here he is singing Till I Hear You Sing from Love Never Dies.
Oh,
now we are joined by two of the amazing playwrights who are part of Te Pō's annual Kohanga Festival. Lovely to welcome Bailey and Te Ariwa to the show. How are you both?
Great. Amazing.
What is the festival?
Kia ora tato. My name is Bailey Watene. I'm one of the emerging writers from the Te Pō programs and mahi that they've done over the years. Kohanga has been one of my babies in the years where I've worked on the festival and the programs and working with the emerging writers coming through there. And now I'm in it myself, threw myself in the deep end and stitched myself up. So Kohanga is a celebration of theatre from emerging writers, new stories, getting lots of different whakaaro out there into the world and bringing a lot of actors and writers, dramaturgs together to just jam some new works out there, yeah.
Yeah, and so I guess Te Pō, having been the host of Kohanga, they're, you know, renowned for being a Māori-led theatre and arts community and practitioner. So this is basically a chance to bring in new writers, new works, and embrace Indigenous stories, but more importantly, Māori and Pacifica stories.
And what's your part in it this time?
So I guess we're both playwrights and we both have been in the arts industry for a little while, and we've been given the opportunity to write our own scripts and share our own stories and have the support of Te Pō at the same time through the Kohanga program. And yeah, Bailey can probably explain a bit more.
I'm on the same waka as Te Ariwa. This is my first time having a go at writing a play. I've been told millions and millions of stories over the years, and I've been given the opportunity to take part in this festival, take what I've been told and regurgitate it in my own way, you know? Not just to say it to my son, but let's say it to everyone, you know?
So what has it meant for you when you started this journey? Was it going to be online when you started, or have you had to adapt your writing because it's now online?
Yeah, we've had to shake a lot of things up. The same thing happened last year with Kohanga. COVID's hit, and that's changed the entire intention of bringing everyone together in the same room and jam out with the energy and the focus of different writers and creators. With COVID hitting, we have to stick to the level 3 guidelines and workshop our mahi online via Zoom as intimately as possible while keeping safe. It's bittersweet, you know. We're keeping ourselves and our whānau safe, and that's the most important thing, but you can't help but miss that sweetness of being in that energetic room and that vibe where you just can't stop, you know? Yeah.
And who have you got on board? And is it you've got completely different cast, the two of you?
Yeah, we have our own cast members, but some of them are also doubling up, which is amazing, and we are very thankful for that. So we've got some really well-known actors and actresses from the industry, and we feel very lucky to have some of them, particularly during this time when it's, you know, tough being in the pandemic and things like that. But thankfully we've been able to fit the spots in our scripts, and yeah, and we're going to be working together through online platforms and things like that. But I don't think it will take away from the stories. I think we all have the same mindset when it comes to the kaupapa, and we're just going to do our best and be a whānau and stay connected, and hopefully our stories, you know, bring the same love and passion that we've been putting into our scripts while we've been writing them.
And from an audience point of view, are we coming to something that's 100% live in the moment, or is parts of it recorded and being presented at that time? How is it working from an audience perspective?
From an audience perspective, you are going to get as close as we can possibly get to a stage. So we're going to have an online platform and work within the restrictions here in Tamaki Makaurau. And we're very excited to be able to put the scripts and put them out there to the people online. So we won't get to have, you know, that physical experience, but I don't think it will take away from what the story means and what we're trying to convey. I think you can still, you know, have that collective experience just by, you know, using the words that we've written and also the passion and the drive of the actors and those we're working with.
So, Bailey, can you tell us what your play is about?
Well, I don't know if I can tell you a little bit, but...
Tell us a lot, then. Tell us everything.
Oh, you know, this is the part I've struggled with the most of everything about writing my play for the first time. Telling people what my play is about is the hardest part. It's the worst. It's difficult. I've had a million different iterations of what I think my play is about. But the one I've commonly come back to, it's inspired by our true events and our historical narrative as Māori kapai. It stems from my East Coast side, my Ngāti Porou roots, and taking from our stories that we've been told of our waka nukutai memeha, I was inspired to write this play, Hoki Wairua Mai, where there's two twins who I've drawn up that live on this waka, and it's their role and responsibility to bring our tipuna from Hawaiki all the way over to Aotearoa to accompany our mothers who are giving birth, kapai. So with us, it's important for us to have our tipuna with us as through all the difficult and amazing experiences in our lives. And this play is about our tipuna coming to be with us. And unfortunately, the waka breaks down and that connection is severed. So what happens, you know, what happens when they can't make it to us, when they can't be there for these times? And, you know, that's just the ground shock of the century.
I wish the audience could see your energy. Yeah, I mean, that just says it all. I can just, see your passion and love for what you're doing. And I imagine that that's all out on the stage or online as we're going to be.
Bit of an extravaganza, you know. I'm trying.
And what about you, Te Aorea?
Aorewa, yeah. my play is about a woman named Miri Mangakahia. And Miri Mangakahia hails from the Hokianga region. And what's special about her story is she was one of the only Māori women to work alongside non-Māori during the suffrage movement. So we've definitely heard about, you know, Kate Sheppard and all of these other suffragettes who have definitely contributed to our history. But when I first heard Miri's name and what she had been involved in, I was also surprised and I was taken back that I hadn't heard her story. And so I got to know her a couple of years ago during my last year of high school and did a few pieces around her story. But then just recently this year, coming into Kōanga, I was able to actually focus and really build into her story a bit more. And I'm trying to portray a script that will be based on her life, but unfortunately some of the facts and information have been lost in history. But I think the essence of what her significance in history is for Aotearoa, I hope will still be conveyed in the script. So yeah, it's about a Māori woman who did some really amazing work for all of us, and especially for Māori women today.
I wonder, Stephen, if she's in Stacey's book. So last night we interviewed Stacey Morrison about her new book, which of course is all the people, all our Māori history and the people, what they've done for in history. So I wonder if she's in there, Stephen.
Mm. Yeah, we'll have to have a look.
Well, that sounds amazing. Both stories. I can't wait to see more.
Yeah. And the website's great. It's nice and easy on Topo's website to be able to book into to which session you want to come to. So we'll make sure we share that up on our social media. What's next for the two of you? When this wraps, what have you got next on the horizon?
With this play, I'm looking to develop it and tour it around my East Coast whanaunga, where it came from, and show them. It's like holding up a mirror, you know, to my own people and saying, hey, look how neat we are, you know. So that's what I hope to do with this play in particular, and the future of my career hopefully will look the same, you know, just holding that mirror up to my people and saying, look at your greatness, you're just amazing. Actually, I think that's what we're all doing. Yeah, but that's where I'm going.
That's a pretty cool way to look at it too. Yeah, beautiful.
And of course, a lot of people that have been in the past festivals have gone on to do exactly that, haven't they? Like a lot of the past festival writing and things have been developed further and either gone on to bigger stages or toured.
Yeah, most definitely. Te Pō have been wonderful in not only just pulling our creatives into the industry, but also making sure that there's a pathway for them to follow through. They make sure that you're held in your career, that you've always got a home to go to, but that you they're just pushing you. You know, they push you out there. They're supporting you. You're never left on your own, and it's amazing. There's more than enough support. And just the small whānau, you know.
That's so cool. And Te Arawa, what about you? What's your plans next?
Yeah, so obviously after this script has been offered to, you know, to the society and to our communities and has been heard, I would like to also continue developing it and editing it and tweaking it as much as I can and get as close to her actual life story as possible. And then hopefully put it on the stage and the audience see it in the full flesh in as much creative and artistic ways as possible. And, yeah, I just feel really grateful to have also worked with her whānau on this story as well and to carry her story as a taonga, which is really amazing. I feel very grateful for that. So looking forward to just continuing to develop it and put it out there.
It's really exciting, and it is an exciting time for young New Zealanders as well. I mean, we spoke about this last night with Stacey, with the new New Zealand's history's curriculum coming in. I mean, the two of you are exactly what we need in regards to being able to do the mahi, because there's a lot of teachers out there that don't have the matarangi Māori understanding and don't have the tikanga and the whakapapa back. So cool to have two young wahine tai going for it, man. And it's just really inspiring. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
So
what inspired both of you to want to take an arts journey, though? Like, where did it begin for you both?
Te Arawa?
Yeah.
I can go first. Gosh, I mean, I think my arts journey began when I was quite young. I did have a musical family, and I got into music as a child and played guitar and things like that. And as much as music is separate from what I'm doing now, which is, you know, script writing, it had the same purpose where you're able to tell stories, but you're also able to listen to other stories that other people are telling. And so I think over time, since getting into music, I've just dived into other things along the way, such as, you know, performance through acting, and then going to university and doing theatre script writing. And then I also do other forms of storytelling. So I work as a journalist. So it's kind of just been like a big like development within the arts industry. And I think the most important part has been connecting with people along the way, not only with our Māori and Pacifica arts community, but also with other people. You're able to share your background, your cultural values, but also other passions between each other. And I think that's the amazing thing about art, is it has no barriers. It forms relationships between people, and you can take all those hard conversations as well. So yeah, it's just been a big development over time for my life in the arts community.
And Bailey?
Yeah, I'm the total opposite. I'm so late to the party. I walked into my first theatre show at about 17 years old. Unknowingly, it was a Te Pō show, and I walked into the show with my best friend wanting to do something different on a Wednesday night than I'd normally ever done. Where did I go? To a theatre show. So we come into this garage looking theatre,
yeah.
A bunch of people that looked like us, talked like us, acted like us, smiled like us. I watched this amazing story and I was hooked, and I just thought, what is this? Not knowing that I've been part of it my whole life with kapahaka and the way that I've grown up through kura, the art of storytelling comes so naturally to the people that brought me up. But once I met Tainui and the likes of Amber and their whānau, I couldn't take my eyes off, and I was guilty. I'm guilty because I then went on to not tell anyone about Te Pau Theatre because I wanted them to be my secret. You know, I wanted that to be my secret getaway. So I kind of held them back a little bit in terms of getting the name out there. They were my secret getaway in Auckland, you know, and I would just enjoy my little Wednesdays with them. And then it just grew into workshopping with them. It grew into doing some arts internships and shadowing Amber and producing, shadowing Ty in the writer's room. They just took me under their wing, and now I'm here. You know, I've done some producing work with them. I've watched all my shows with them and other companies through them. I'm such a baby in this industry, and I'm just having a go at everything. I feel so late. I'm just so behind the wheel, but I love it. I love it so much. There's so much healing that it brings to people. It's such a positive way to look at, to address some of the darker histories that our country has endured. And that's where my heart is. It's looking at revitalizing our reo. My heart is with my Māori people, with non-Māori people as well. Aotearoa is for everyone. And I think the arts is such a positive and healthy way to bring us together and address certain things where everyone needs to be part of the conversation. Mm. Yeah.
Tau tuku that all the way. I mean, Te Pau is the most amazing. The kaupapa behind it, the, you know, whakawhanaungatanga there, everyone is welcome. And once you've been welcomed, you're part of it forever. So huge shout out to Tainui and Amber and the trust there.
Tau tuku.
And we love having and meeting all these young people coming through that are being embraced by them and being carried through the waka together. So well done to both of you. We really look forward to following the festival some more. I know that it kind of picks off this week, and there's some really exciting workshops coming up apart from your ones as well. Some really cool interviews and talks with, as you've said, some really amazing practitioners. So where do we go to check out Te Pau?
Te Pau, live updates every 5 minutes is on their Facebook page. Just search up Te and Pau. They also got their Instagram handle, Te Pau Theatre, and their website is www.tepautheatre.nz.
Fantastic. All the best with your season and every journey ahead.
Tēnā rā te kōrua.
Nā mihi.
That was a superb interview. Thank you so much to Te Pau and to Bailey and Te Arua for coming on and sharing your passion, the connection you both have with your mahi is fantastic, and I can't wait to see the outputs of both of your workshops. Well, another fantastic mix of a show this evening, Stephen.
Oh, I just love the variety, although many of them having similar themes throughout the night, which was cool too.
Oh, definitely. I mean, our lovely Wahine Toa, that all three of them had very clear links together. I definitely got my education speak on tonight.
Absolutely. And what I've laughed at, Emma, which happens in Zoom more than in studio, are the conversations we've had before and after we've hit record. Don't you wish sometimes that we just kept recording? We've heard some beautiful things before and after.
We definitely do. And I don't know what it is. It's a little bit, I suppose it's a bit like stage fright. As soon as you know you're being recorded, you kind of, and we do it ourselves with pronunciation of people's names, even for us with the bulletins, having to read them aloud. Suddenly, what seems so natural to us, we suddenly freak out.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, we still have some slots in our upcoming episodes, so if you would like to get on KickArts, email us at info@kickarts.org.nz, and we'll see where we're at next week.
And remember, you can flick us a donation and sponsor us and help us stay on air via our website at kickarts.org.nz on the Support Us page.
Absolutely, and we appreciate all the support we can get.
Hey, and of course, don't forget that we've got our amazing marketing packages available for you and your event as well. These include opportunities for live interviews, to be part of our bulletins, to have a featured listing on our website, and of course, have us share all of your marketing over to our social media platforms. So if you want to find out more about our media packages, flick us an email and we'll send you out a marketing pack.
Now, we're closing the show today with the fourth single, Fox Bright, from Reb Fountain's forthcoming album, Iris, produced by Flying Nun Records. We'll leave the show tonight with Fox Bright. Have a great week and make sure you
kick some arts.
Is worse than the night. Reflections of fright and the light sparked into and flickered daylight. Take to the bow.
Going live, same time under the stars, saying blah, 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 blah.